Welcome back to Word Balloon. In association with Newsarama, this is John Suntress. On this conversation, we'll be talking with the creative team of Supergirl, writer Sterling Gates and artist Jamal Igel. They discuss Supergirl from the recent reveal that Lucy Lane is the new Superwoman, to the death of her father, Zor-El, and the fallout from the new Krypton series spinning off into the current direction of all the Super books. There's plenty of character dissections of Lana Lang, Allura, Cat Grant, and Kara Zor-El herself, and their views on where all these stories are going with these strong women and how they fit into this corner of the DC Superverse. Let me ask you, how did you get the Supergirl job to begin with?
I work as Jeff Johns' assistant as a day job when I'm not writing. We were at lunch one day, and we were talking, and I had been in the back of my head kind of trying to figure out how to, you know, say I really, really want to do Supergirl, write the book. We were at lunch, and I said, you know, Jeff, I really want to do this. And he dropped his fork and was like, really? And I said, I would love to work with the character. And he said, okay, well, my advice to you is write an issue. And, you know, at that point, I'd written a couple issues of Green Lantern Corps, and Jeff and I had written that Secret Files, Green Lantern Sinestro Corps Secret Files, which was a monster endeavor to put together. And I really was itching to do more stuff in the DCU. And he said, so write your first issue, you know, as a spec script and you know, see what that's like. And so I sat down over a weekend and I just wrote it. He had a lot of advice for me about it, but he liked it quite a bit. And he sent over to James Robinson, who had just come on writing Superman. And James read it and liked it quite a bit. And I had a meeting with James and Jeff about Supergirl. From that meeting, they approached editor Matt Idelson and said, we think we found someone that would like to write Supergirl. And Idelson listened to them and read the script and called me a few days later and offered me the job to write the ongoing book. So that's the short version. But really, I owe Jeff and James and Nacho Castro and Tom Palmer, who were Matt's assistants, and Idelson, like, I owe them my eternal thanks because they really believed in me and championed me coming on in the book. I can't thank Jeff Johns enough. Like, he really has worked a lot with me over the past few years and taught me a lot about comic writing and comic scripting and you know, he's been my hero, more or less. And I you know, as I said, I can't really thank him enough for really shepherding and helping my comic writing career.
I happen to see it on the front page of Newsarama right before our interview that there's a preview for the next issue of Supergirl.
There is. Jamal didn't draw that one. Fernando Dagnino drew it, and he's a brilliant artist from Spain.
Okay.
Yeah, he did a really good job. I actually did the unthinkable and went on vacation. We went to visit our family in France 12 days, and it was part vacation, it was part spoil the baby, because she hadn't seen her grandfather yet. So her feet never touched the ground the entire time we were there.
Any inspirations for any upcoming scenes for Supergirl?
Well, we actually talked about that I needed to write a scene in Paris to justify the tax write-off.
Exactly.
So Jamal could call that a research trip.
Uh-huh. Very nice. Congratulations to both of you, because just through no fault of anyone in particular, you know, Supergirl's been kind of, you know, tossed around like a volleyball, and it's nice to see that she has a good home with two creators. And I think you guys are delivering on the first big event in the modern age of Supergirl that I can think of. You guys are part of the big brain trust with James Robinson and Greg Rucka and Eddie Barrows. And who's James' artist?
Renato Guedes.
Who's doing New Krypton? Who draws New Krypton?
That's Pete Woods.
That's right, and Pete's amazing on New Krypton.
He's been doing a bang-up job.
Supergirl's given her own assignment in it, contending with Superwoman, and also the fallout of the New Krypton story as it was happening on Earth.
Right.
You guys tell me, I mean, like, how did the master plan happen? I mean, did you guys, like, sit down, James, you guys, and Greg and everybody, and how did this all get hammered out?
I mean, responsibility for that should really start with Jeff Johns. Jeff was doing Brainiac and knew that he wanted Superman to find Kandor in Brainiac's ship. around the time he was plotting that, James came on Superman, and the two of them really hashed out a lot of the bigger beats of New Krypton, that first initial crossover, which is going to get confusing because I'll refer to New Krypton, and I mean World of New Krypton, or do I mean the first story we did? I came along and said I wanted to do stuff with Supergirl, and that whole kind of ball started rolling separately. And then Supergirl got kind of folded into New Krypton's plans because Jeff wanted to have Supergirl's parents be part of Kandor, beyond Kandor.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I got in the mix, and it just sort of sprang out of that. And then Jeff, at the end of New Krypton, said, "See you guys later." And Rucka stepped into the room, and so it was me and James and Greg Rucka. And we've just sort of been bouncing things back and forth ever since.
Jamal, how much design are you able to bring to Supergirl as opposed to maybe what has been developed in the brain trust for this big, long story?
Not too much right now. A lot of the stuff that has been seen are things that were already set up. You mentioned Pete Woods, and I have to say this now. Pete Woods is a madman. Pete built a scale model of Kandor in SketchUp.
Really?
SketchUp, which is the Google design program.
And streets, buildings, everything, and sent it to me.
It's kind of sick and kind of incredible all at once.
That's really cool.
That you can zoom in and see what it would be like to look up at the buildings in Kandor. Like,
right,
you can do street views looking up.
And the thing that amazes me is that he is penciling and inking World of New Krypton, so I don't know where he's got the time, because he's designing all these rooms. He just, like, the last thing, rooms, weapons, armors, vehicles, like, he's doing all this stuff while penciling and inking the monthly book, and I have to commend him on that. I don't think people give him enough credit for the work that he does, so...
When we were doing New Krypton Special, there's that spread of Superman flying. He comes across the city, mm-hmm. and it's a double page spread. And Pete actually mapped out what buildings are what. I keep it on my desk as reference. But like, he knows that there's a park that's labeled D on the map, and there's, you know, the main military center, there's scientific research centers, and just all this stuff, and I was blown away by how much thought he'd put into it just to draw that spread. You know, he mapped out a whole city just to draw a spread, and he knows every building, and that's amazing to me that he can keep it all straight.
Well, I like the way this whole story, and you got to fold in what's going on, obviously, in Superman with Supergirl. But I like how it has one foot on New Krypton and one foot in Metropolis and really around the world.
Yeah.
The supporting players are interesting. Again, let's focus on Supergirl with the big reveal, and we still got one more part left of Superwoman, but Lucy Lane being revealed as the Superwoman.
Bum, bum, bum.
Man, those Silver Age days with Jimmy are long gone, dealing with Jimmy as a werewolf and everything. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, she's not exactly dating him anymore. And there's actually a Silver Age issue of Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen where Lucy Lane gets powers and becomes a superhero. I found that recently. It's like Jimmy Olsen 67 or something. And I thought it was pretty funny and kind of ironic. But.
Yeah, she comes pretty close to discovering Superman's identity in that story. So he ends up taking the powers away from her before
she figures it out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't want to spoil a secret.
Man.
So she was asking who is Superman in that story.
Right.
But bum bum. Lucy Lane, yeah. There's one more part to the story. And then I think I can say this. September, we're doing Supergirl Annual 1. And the backup story in that is the secret origin of Superwoman. So you're going to get some questions answered in the last part of the story, and then it'll kind of become sort of an ongoing investigation for Kara, and then Secret Origin of Superwoman will hopefully answer all the lingering questions to some degree. But
wow.
there's some crazy stuff coming up with Superwoman.
So she's kind of really super, again, the modern age Supergirl's first supervillain, I guess. You know,
right.
That was kind of the goal. You know, in my initial pitch document, I said, like, Supergirl needs a Lex Luthor. And I wanted to do a big story to develop a villain that could act as a Lex Luthor type. And that's sort of how we first approached the storyline. So.
Well, and also the Lanes in general. I mean, you know, who knew that Lois's family just had this real, you know, hard on against Superman and everything, and you know, how far this plot goes.
And it'll go deeper.
Sure.
Again, when New Krypton was first pitched to me, I thought it was a masterstroke on Jeff and James's part to have General Lane be the main bad guy. Like, and it's something we've never really dealt with before, and what great drama you get out of having Lois's family square off against Superman and the Superman family. Like, so I was pretty on board with that idea right from the start.
And then on the other side, you got, again, the problems of New Krypton and the kind of the caste system that's there and the almost Roman Empire-like kind of government and, hierarchy of what's going on and the machinations of Zod, the machinations of Allura.
Right.
Boy, that sucks for Kara. I mean, you know, going up against her cousin or her mom.
She's got a hard road ahead of her.
Yeah, she's very much caught in the middle between not just, you know, the love, like, because she Allura's Kara's mother, and she does love her, but the way that Allura's been acting through the series so far doesn't really engender her to a lot of people. So I always find their interactions very interesting because I know, and Sterling knows, you know, what kind of pain Allura is really going through, but she tries so hard to hide that from Kara, from everybody else.
The die was already cast that no matter what, Zor-El was going to die, or was that a discussion or anything?
That was a pretty heated debate going in, but Jeff and James eventually agreed. Like, you get far more drama out of the loss of Zor-El rather than everything's bright and shiny, Silver Age. Kara's two parents live in Kandor. Plus, it makes it far more personal. It makes Reactron a very personal villain for Supergirl, which I like too. You know, you said earlier we're building, you know, a supervillain for Supergirl. Well, really, Who is Superwoman is about building two supervillains, and it's building Reactron and Superwoman up for Supergirl to face off. And those two villains are responsible for the death of her father,
mm-hmm.
and that makes that instantly powerful, powerful storytelling.
Well, and again, like you say, it upsets the picture postcard perfect kind of world that I think everyone had in their minds of Kandor and Krypton. And that is the fun of the story, is to strip all that away and show that it is a hard place and show its warts and the consequences
right.
of those warts as well.
You know, and yeah, I mean, just going in, Jeff and James, like, really said, well, we need to upset things. This can't be a predictable Superman story. And I think the death of Zor-El made New Krypton completely unpredictable because you realize, holy crap, no one's safe.
Taking it a step further, and I know that this was teased in Origin and Omens, the backup story in Part 2, Lana Lang coughing up a little blood.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm guessing that's her that's flat on her back with the IV and or whatever shoved up her nose, whatever the hose is up her nose.
Yeah, a breather, yeah.
So,
yeah, Lana Lang has her own set of problems coming up, too, that we really aren't going to get into till probably Supergirl 47-ish.
Oh, really? Wow, that far down the line. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a crossover coming up in August that I don't think we'll be able to fit in some of the Lana stuff. You'll see scenes here and there, but I think it really is going to come to a head.
Well, how does that, from an art standpoint, Jamal, how do crossovers affect you?
Well, it really depends. Because I tend to be pretty fast when I'm drawing. I kind of put my head down and plow straight through. The only thing that really kind of shakes the apple cart a little bit is when I'm waiting for other people's artwork to match up to what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of a problem when we were doing the initial New Krypton art, because I was waiting for pages from Pete, and I was waiting for pages from Renato, and I was kind of in a holding pattern for a couple of days, but I already had my own stuff already planned out. So when we were doing issue 36, I was very careful to keep it as vague but familiar as possible so that things lined up fairly well. But at the time, I was probably about a month ahead of everybody else.
And that's just sort of the nature of these crossovers. Like, different teams move at different speeds.
Do you guys talk the story through then? I mean, how often are you guys in communication as far as plotting this crossover and everything?
I stay away. I step away, and I let the man do his job.
Yeah, Jamal's very easy to work with from that point.
The thing is with me is I don't like to micromanage other people. I have enough problems micromanaging myself.
Sure.
So I don't want, unless somebody specifically asks for my input, I'm not going to stick my 2 cents in. Not that I don't have ideas. I do have ideas, and I try to fit those into the artwork, but this is Sterling's story. I'm not going to write the story as well as Sterling does. And Sterling, stick your fingers in your ears for a second, okay?
Okay, I'll hold the phone away.
All right. Sterling is probably one of the most talented new writers that I've seen in a very long time. And frankly, just writes these emotionally evocative scripts. And like, I'm reading the script for the new issue right now. And I started reading it, and I sent him a text message this afternoon. I was like, dude, you're going to make me cry. Leave me alone.
How has the transition to writing comics been for you, Sterling? What challenges do you still see?
What are the challenges? Everything is a challenge. Formatting is weird. Like, formatting is totally different from, you know, they teach you screenplay formatting in college.
Mm-hmm.
There is no set type of formatting for comic strip writing. You know, I don't know. My scripts are probably more detailed than I would write in a film or television script. You know, I probably, Jamal, I don't know. Do I micromanage the scripts? Do I put too much detail in? Like,
No. Occasionally, I'm surprised when 40 pages of script pop out for a comic.
Yeah, and then you're like, panel 2, and I describe a toy monster or whatever, and you're like, wow,
right.
Really? You felt that passionately about the toy monster.
No, but those are things that I like to see. Those are things that I'm a big believer that whatever goes into the script, I'm damn well going to try and put on the page. So the more that a writer gives me, that gives me more to play with, and I try to put as much into it as possible. So I don't mind getting a really detailed script. If it's an Alan Moore level detailed script, I might have to question your sanity.
Right. Right.
Sure.
I don't know that I'm Alan Moore level yet, but I will be very intensely detailed in scripts.
There is a lot going on, though, in this story, and especially on the Supergirl side, because you do slowly have the mystery behind Superwoman, what's going on at Kandor, just following, you know, the Reactron crimes that he is committing and the murders that he's committing. So, you know, there's a lot of business here, which is good. It's a very layered script, and I think the storytelling is very clear, so you guys are succeeding, so that's the good news.
Well, thanks.
Well, I wanted to ask about a couple of the supporting characters that are specific to the Supergirl book. Let's talk about Cat Grant, who has returned to Metropolis, much different than she was back in the 80s and 90s.
She does harbor some kind of resentment towards Supergirl, and that's something that we're going to explore down the line, but right now it's like I'm having so much fun doing these scenes where she's writing these articles about Supergirl that I don't want to I don't want to say blow my wad, but I don't want to go too early.
Okay.
Because I think if you eventually diffuse that resentment in some way, then you kind of lose that. But there is a very large story for Kat in mind, and there's a very good reason for her. Problems with Supergirl that exist just beyond, you know, she's old and Supergirl's young, so she has to resent Supergirl. You know what I mean? Like,
but I like how you guys have tapped into the zeitgeist of what's going on now, and the fact that you've got a cougar in the book, and again, there's an opportunity for cheesecake, Jamal.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah,
Kat when I draw a cat, I am fully aware that Cat is in full possession of all of her sexual power. And she will let everybody in the room know it. Everybody on the planet, if she possibly could. I like drawing Cat, and I especially like drawing scenes with Cat and Lana together because I try to draw them as diametrically opposed in style as you could possibly have two different women. Like, Lana's dress is, a lot of the style that I use for Lana is very Asian influence, like a lot of, like, Chinese dresses. And
yeah, I was going to ask you about that at some point, you know, in your head, did Lana spend time in the Orient? Like, and that's why into wearing... Because she looks great in those dresses, and I love those dresses, but I just wondered what your decision was to put her in those.
Well, my wife, Corinne, works in fashion. She works for a company that does photo retouching for the fashion industry. You know, they work with Vogue and Cosmo and Louis Vuitton, and they do a lot of work with Annie Leibovitz. So I get to see all of this, like, fashion material lying around. So when I was thinking about how I wanted Lana to be dressed, I was thinking more in terms of sort of something that was a little eclectic but still businesslike.
What I like about it, like, because I obviously, John, I didn't really, like, specify what Lana should wear. And Jamal ran with it, and I love that she's in that stuff, personally.
Yeah.
I also love that Jamal, I don't know if you looked at what Carlos Pacheco was doing with the character with Kurt in Superman.
Right.
But he put her in stuff like that. Yeah, so yeah. So to me, it organically makes sense to go from that book into our book in regards to how she dresses and her wardrobe.
Carlos didn't push it as much as I'm pushing it right now, but he definitely...
But I think Lana looks great,
thanks.
I think stuff looks really, really, really cool for her, and again, it's so different from what Kat wears. Like,
oh god!
Like Kat, the scene. What issue did we do? Is that 40? I guess where they're at the journalism award dinner.
No, it's 39.
Wherever. So Kat's in this like slinky black, completely inappropriate dress for the environment she's in, and Lana's wearing this totally hip, cool, like green oriental style dress, and that to me, and like visually, sets the two characters apart so well that you look at it and you go, okay, that's like clearly they don't like each other very much, you know.
No,
just because they don't blend.
with Kat, it's all like Victoria's Secret and Fredericks of Hollywood. It is just the sluttiest possible dresses that I could buy.
Excellent. Here, here. No, that's cool.
I think I need to write some more Cat Grant scenes.
There you go. Absolutely.
I think that's what this is telling me.
Well, and then another character that I'm glad has come back to Metropolis, and I guess it's a different character, but it's an homage to at least the Silver and Bronze Age character, Inspector Henderson.
Ah, the good inspector. Yeah.
Now Mike Henderson is different than Bill Henderson, correct?
Absolutely. Bill Henderson is still commissioner of the Metropolis Police Department.
Okay.
And that's who in issue 40 Mike Henderson is on the phone with the commissioner, and he calls him Bill. That's Bill Henderson.
I see. Okay.
They share the last name.
Right.
That's about it.
Okay. Well, because and I like an Inspector Henderson in Metropolis. Regardless, that's cool.
Yeah, you know that character actually came out of, I needed a cop character, and I was in, I think I was at Baltimore Comic Con, at the convention in Baltimore, and a man approached me with his two, maybe three sons, and he was like, he said, "Excuse me, sir," and I'm like, "You write Supergirl?" And I said, "Yeah," and he goes, "I love Inspector Henderson from the old Adventures of Superman TV show from the 50s. And I said, "Okay, cool." And he goes, "Can you possibly work that character in somehow? Like, we need to see, I want to have an Inspector Henderson back." And I said, "For you, sir, I will absolutely do that." Luckily, I already had a cop character, like, in mind that I knew I needed a cop character, and boom, he named it. And that's where Inspector Henderson. And then I like, you know, figured out who he was and where he came from and all that stuff. But really, it was just a fan asked me to do it, and I did.
Well, and I really liked how it was picked up in Black Lightning Year One. And that
that's Bill Henderson. That's the original Inspector.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, because, all right, now I am confused. All right.
It can be confusing. One's a white dude, one's a black dude. Visually, they're set very different, set very far apart.
Okay, okay.
But the Inspector Henderson in Black Lightning Year One is Bill Henderson early in his career, who has since gone on to become the Metropolis Commissioner.
Interesting. Well, that's cool. And no, I was always a big Inspector Henderson fan as well, and I always just liked how he treated Clark Kent. More serious,
And there's a story for Inspector Henderson too. Like I've been seeding a story for Inspector Henderson as we've been going.
Definitely.
And you'll see more of him. I feel like a broken record sometimes, but you'll see more of him, not connected to New Krypton when we're doing. We'll do some other stuff that isn't New Krypton. So New Krypton heavy. So you'll get to see some more Inspector Henderson stuff.
And does Jimmy figure into Lucy's life like she did it, like he did in the Silver Age, or are they?
No.
Okay.
No, they dated briefly. When Lucy first moved in with Lois, they dated.
Okay.
But Jimmy's not. It's funny. Like we actually kind of have book to book characters that are our characters, and Jimmy is James's character. So he doesn't really figure big into what we're doing in Supergirl, and just as Inspector Henderson is a Supergirl character, so he won't figure big into, say, Action Comics.
I see.
You know, we kind of sat down and said who wants who, and I clearly wanted Lana and Cat Grant, and you know, Lucy Lane, and we all kind of divvied up characters, and Jeff took like. Jeff took Steve Lombard, you know, and Ron Troop, so we could do stuff with them in the Brainiac story, and James has Jimmy, and Greg has Lois primarily.
I know Jamal, you were a reader back then, so that to me those were the great nucleus of the Daily Planet group, and I guess that was part of the GBS group as well. But those stories always get shit on, and I'm always like, the backstory of the Planet and GBS and Clark Kent and company was very rich, and I thought really good characterization back then.
Well, you know, I think they really went out of their way to really build up those other those side characters and give them lives. Like, Kat had this whole separate life with her son.
Yes.
You know, up until his unfortunate death at the hands of one of Toy Man's robots. So, and the same thing with Ron Troop and Lucy Lane, you know, same thing with Perry and his son Jerry and Alice. And wasn't there was like a copy girl, there was like an issue where Alice, who worked in the copy room, and they found out she was homeless. And,
that's a great, that's an Adventures of Superman issue.
Yeah, and that's the stuff that I like about what we're doing in Supergirl is that we're building up these side characters again. And the same thing in Superman and in Action is that, you know, you're getting all these other stories that are being brought into the main books, and it fleshes out the world more. It gives it a more cohesive feeling. And it, you know, I'm interested as a reader in seeing what happens between Lana and Kat and Kara and Kat and Linda and Kat, and how that shapes up.
Well, sorry, let me jump in here. One of my all-time favorite comic series is James Robinson's Starman.
Yep.
And every supporting cast character in Starman mattered and had his or her own story that keyed into Jack Knight's life.
Yep.
And I loved that. I loved that idea. And so I've been approaching, you know, a lot of what we're doing with the supporting cast characters. I've been looking at it is, how does this affect Supergirl? And how does she react to these things? You know, whether I'd love to do a Cat Grant one-shot. Wow, now that I've said that out loud, maybe I should pitch a Cat Grant one-shot. I'd love to do a Cat Grant one-shot, but it kind of goes back to, but how would that affect Supergirl? And my main concern is Supergirl. She's our title character. So that's kind of how I've been approaching supporting cast. But I think you need a good, solid supporting cast to keep you, the reader, interested month to month to month. Like, not every story is a hit. But if there's something going on with a supporting cast character with a B-plot that you can at least latch on to and keep going and keep your interest, then okay.
Well,
I haven't totally failed at my job.
Well, and I think, too, if you look at both of the two major companies, and even I'll even throw in an Image book, too, Invincible. I think Kirkman has managed to achieve that with his cast of characters.
Agreed.
I think Brubaker and Captain America, Sharon Carter's
story.
Yeah,
Sharon Carter is brilliant.
There you go.
Brilliant.
And certainly in Daredevil, you know, Foggy's story is almost always as important as Matt's story, and where he is in the story is always important. I just think,
right.
You know, a lot of B-list characters that can't sustain a monthly, maybe that's one of the problems, is they don't have that Greek chorus the way Superman does, Supergirl, Batman, and the characters we just mentioned.
Yeah. And I just think it's important that I mean, before we came on this book, Kara didn't have a supporting cast.
Yep.
Outside of Captain Boomerang Jr., who was a villain, and they may or may not have been kind of dating, kind of.
Yeah.
And I felt like I really wanted to build people around her that weren't Superman, like, because how many issues am I picking up where Superman is the supporting cast member? And I wanted human characters, I wanted Kryptonian characters once New Krypton, you know, came along. And so that's why we've been building Allura and Cat Grant and Lana Lang, and even Ma Kent shows up occasionally, Lois Lane shows up occasionally. I've also been kind of purposefully developing female characters because the book is Supergirl.
Yep.
And I want to see Supergirl and her interaction with other female characters. And, you know, I find every single character in our cast very interesting. And I want to do more. Like, I wish our books were 40 pages a month so I could do all the crazy stuff that I want to do with all these characters. But, and as Jamal's hand cramps, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so enamored with our supporting cast and I think they're cool, and I've been trying to build them up and make them cool. And besides, everyone that watches Smallville knows who Lana Lang is and that she's important to the Superman mythos, so why not use her in the Superman mythos? And if there's not room to use her in the main Superman book, well, then that's okay. We'll do stuff with her over in ours and build that relationship over there. And that was where I came from. That was how I came to that conclusion coming into it.
That's good. No, that's
good.
Cool.
I Jeff Johns is what was our guiding light to start off with the stuff, and he gave me a lot of advice. And you know, we talked a lot about Lana Lang and a lot about Kat, and I always wanted Kat to be the foil for Supergirl. Like, I think that's just too rich, and he'd already been sort of building towards it in Action Comics, building towards bringing Kat Grant back. And Kat, you said earlier Kat's a different character than she was. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think she has grown and changed in the time that she's been away from the spotlight. I'm not saying, like all the stories still happened. Like, I'm not saying otherwise.
I understand.
But I think that there's been, she's had a lot of trauma and a lot of, like Allura, you know, there's been a lot of trauma in her life that's been really, really hard for her to deal with. And she, you know, almost like Allura, she kind of came to grips by growing bitchier.
Sure.
And so we'll, you know, that's what we're seeing, and she's got a bigger story. I've got a bigger story in mind for Kat in the long run. In the meantime, she's writing some really horrific articles about Supergirl. wait till you see what's. Wait till you see what's on the front page next, is what I always like to say to people, because I'm going to write some really nasty things for Cat Grant's articles. For a while, we even talked about doing a website and having Cat Grant's blog and running it like TMZ. and doing, like, pictures and whatnot, and it's just taking apart Supergirl. But
When you and I talk later, I should tell you about this idea that I came up for a Supergirl story, which involves a website and guys with cameras.
Oh, no.
Excellent. Very good.
Wow.
If you notice in the story, everybody has got a secret. Like, everybody's got something that they're trying to hide from Kara, which is, you know, maddening.
Right. From her point of view, yeah. But, I mean, who hasn't felt, as a teenager, who hasn't felt like everyone has something to hide from them? You know, like, when my father passed away, I was 17, and a lot of stuff came spilling out in the weeks after that that I had no idea about. And so I think I just kind of, I write, part of my motivation in writing some of this stuff is, as a teenager, she should feel like everyone's kind of keeping things from her and hiding stuff from her because they think, well, she's just a teenager. She can't handle it. When she can, she could if they would tell her these things. But,
right.
You know, that's just sort of, I don't know how I'm approaching it.
Well, let's build on that. Where do you guys see her? Where is Kara in her maturation? I mean, how long has it been? And I don't mean this from a continuity standpoint, but like roughly, how long has it been since, you know, she popped out of the rocket? And, you know, how used to is she to being a hero and doing the things that she's expected to do?
Well, you're asking us to pin down things that we've been, you know, kind of intentionally not pinning down.
Right.
In my head, she went in that rocket when she was roughly 12 to 13.
Uh-huh.
She moved across the cosmos for 35 years in suspended animation, so she grew physically at a much slower rate.
Mm-hmm.
She pops out of the rocket somewhere around what a human would interpret as 15 years old, 15 to 16.
Okay.
Right. And it's been, with 1 year later built into it, it's been about 2-ish years.
Okay.
But I hesitate to say she's 18, period.
Oh, no,
or
no, no.
She's 17, period. But a lot of people have asked me that at conventions and in interviews and things, and I just don't think that's the... I mean, it's like, how old is Superman?
Well, I always, you know, I kind of agree with John Byrne where he's like kind of perpetually 29 or 30, or 30.
And see, I take it a little bit further, and I say, well, he's probably about 32-ish, 33-ish.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. But I don't think you should pin it down and say, boom, he's exactly 36 years old and 117 days. Like, I just don't think that's necessarily conducive to the story. Nor if you think he's 35, you don't want it to mess up your image.
Well, I agree with all that. What I was wondering more from is, you know, at what level of experience is she, you know, how long has she been a hero? How long has she been, you know?
Oh, I've gone on this completely long tirade for no real reason.
No. No, I think you've answered some questions that other people may have.
I think she's been operating as Supergirl around 2-ish years.
Okay.
Ish. I like using the ish clock.
No problem.
It's either plus or minus two years.
And Jamal, I mean, her look, I know that people were concerned that, you know, especially, and, you know, you give a book to Mike Turner, there's definitely going to be a cheesecake value. Where is the cheesecake quotient with Supergirl when you draw it?
Very, very, very tiny.
In the villains.
It's a very tiny.
In Superwoman's posterior.
Yeah.
And Cat Grant
like
for
some
the
of my friends, Ridge. Some of my friends have been really, like, ribbing me about, wow, Superwoman's got a, you know, she got back.
Yeah, I was like, you can,
oh, yeah.
You can go blue. Don't worry, Sterling.
She's got front, too, but...
Yeah.
When it comes to... The thing is, for me, when it comes to Supergirl, and part of when the very first conversation that I had with Matt Idelson when we were first talking about me doing the book, I sat down in his office and he looked at me and he goes, "I never want to see Supergirl's panties again." and I said, "I completely agree." With a character like Supergirl, for me, I don't think she should be drawn intentionally sexy. I think there should be a sort of coy sexiness about her, but I don't think it should be as overt as she's been drawn, because I've seen a lot of artwork since they did the redesign. I've seen a lot of artwork online and even in the book itself prior to me coming on board that I just couldn't look at personally because it didn't fit my image of what Supergirl or teenage Supergirl is supposed to be. So I intentionally have limited the cheesecake, the sexiness to her character because I just don't feel like that's what she should represent. She's, you know, she's Superman's cousin. She wears the S, but she's, you know, she should be, even by default, sort of a role model for younger children. Now, this doesn't mean that I'm opposed to drawing sexy characters. I'm not opposed to drawing sexy characters at all. It's just it has to be appropriate to the character. You can do cheesecake with Power Girl. You just can't do that with Supergirl because they're two completely different characters. And the same thing with Catwoman. Catwoman is supposed to be sexy. You want to push that quote, that, you know, hotness in her. I don't really feel like I can push that hotness in Supergirl because it just doesn't feel comfortable with me.
Well, and in my from my point of view, I feel like she sort of outgrew that. Like, it was a phase where she was wearing super short skirts and, you know, like teenagers don't wear stuff from Hollister forever. And eventually they decide to pare it back a little bit.
Sure.
And so we very consciously have been trying to pull it back a little bit to show maturation and growth in the character.
Right.
Now, you guys mentioned Power Girl. All Kryptonians are supposedly banned from Earth. Or, you know, will Power Girl figure into the big story in some way down the line?
She is not part of our plan right now.
Okay.
And honestly, like, just from my... I don't think most of the DCU even recognize Power Girl as a Kryptonian.
Maybe they still think she's, like, Arion's granddaughter or whatever.
Right, yeah. Well, no, seriously.
No, I understand. I just like the continuity answer, that's all.
Well, I mean, I know for me, it's sort of more blatant with Supergirl because she wears the S. That's when the average...
Well, and Superman flies up and says, "Hey, everybody, this is my cousin."
Sure.
In that storyline, you know. Like,
sure. Right.
It makes it common knowledge. I'm sure Lois did a big piece about the Supergirl from Krypton, and, you know, like if Chris Kent can get a front page Daily Planet piece about the boy from Krypton, I'm positive Lois wrote one for Supergirl.
Sure.
In fact,
sure.
We should show that. She should have a framed Supergirl from Krypton Daily Planet front page.
I think we could stick that in
our apartment. Yeah, in Hammersmith Tower.
That would be cool.
Let's do it.
All right.
And so then I do look forward, though, to seeing more of the two Karas kind of facing each – or not facing each other, but really getting to know each other. I mean, the best I've ever seen is the funny pinups that like guys like Adam Hughes has done where –
Right.
one of my personal favorites.
Cheesecake? Like,
well, yeah. There's that one that I saw, and I forget what –
Ed Benes one that's like super cheesecake.
Oh, yeah, the one where he's picking
where, like, Power Girl's checking out Kara's panties or something. It's really weird.
Well, there's one that I love that, and this was a couple of years ago, but Power Girl is just gushing about how cool Supergirl is, and the whole time Supergirl is steaming, looking at her chest, and, you know, standing there with her little A cups and everything, and,
right.
You know, and just kind of fuming. And the whole time, Power Girl's just like, wow, just everybody likes you, and you're so popular, and you're so great. I just think it's so wonderful.
I remember that one. I saw that one online.
That killed me.
I'm out of the loop.
It just killed me.
It's a sketch that Adam Hughes did a bunch of years back where she's just like Power Girl is towering over Supergirl, and her tits are like right up at her face, and she's just going on and on about how cool Supergirl is. And Supergirl has just got the most dour, like Adam Hughes pouty face on, you know, it's like.
Well, I'm not going to do that scene.
No, but it would be, you know, just as much as I've enjoyed seeing, even briefly in Infinite Crisis, the Golden Age
right.
Superman and modern-day Superman together. I mean, and again, in the Justice Society as well. It's, you know, the differences between Power Girl and Supergirl, beyond the physical differences, the very hard life that Power Girl had and not protected life, but certainly more of a family that Supergirl had. And how much of that difference is going to play, too? I mean, we're seeing that kind of shattered now with the death of Zor-El. But, you know, those years of Supergirl really living on Krypton and being part of Kryptonian society and stuff, she seems to have not be sure about this current version of Krypton, but that's an advantage that she had over Superman, certainly.
Absolutely. Greg Ruck and I are writing a story in Superman Secret Files, which comes out in August, that takes place on old Krypton. And it's about Thara Akvar, who's Flamebird right now in Action Comics.
Yes.
And Kara, when they're kids, and they go on a an adventure on old Krypton. And we'll actually get to see what, like, old Krypton society was like and what Kara's life was like on old Krypton. But, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, she was raised in a purely Kryptonian environment, and things on New Krypton Kal might not recognize. Like, for instance, I don't know, the bathroom. Like, Kara's going to know how to use it, and Kal's going to be like, what the hell is this? This wasn't in the Hollow vid or whatever. Like, you know,
yeah, where was that, Crystal?
They have very different approaches towards New Krypton. And I think, I mean, you said Kara, you know, seems a little bewildered by New Krypton. I don't know that she's bewildered by the idea of New Krypton. I think she's bewildered by her role in New Krypton and her mother's role on New Krypton. You know, she is, for all intents and purposes, she's become a princess. I never say that, but she's become a princess. Her mother's in charge of an entire race, an entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's going to see, you know, I'm going to do some stuff in the near future where you get to see her interaction with people on New Krypton. What do they think of her? You know, she's like Princess Diana to some people. To other people, they don't like her. You know, she abandoned them or whatever. I mean, it's a very strange place for her, I think, flying as she flies through it and looks around.
Well, it falls into the cult of personality. You know, she becomes so popular in some corners, and then people just spend the rest of their time knocking her down. I wonder if it's a Kryptonian version of the internet.
I don't know if I should say that. Maybe. to be seen.
Cool. Well, and also now, Sterling, how much are you able to contribute to the strangeness of Krypton? I know I talked to Rucka in New York, and he was telling me about, you know, when he was trying to plot things out for New Krypton with James. You know, James is the one that's saying, hey, man, let's not forget, we got things like Thought Beasts. We've got, you know, James seems to be the encyclopedia of, hey, don't forget to put this in there and that. Are there aspects of Krypton that you're looking forward to exploiting yourself?
Yes.
All right.
There are a couple cool things. Like, I want to do a scene in the Kryptonian library, because I want to know, like, what do the poets on old Krypton, what did they write about? Like that kind of stuff interests me more, like art and literature of old Krypton and what's it like on new Krypton? How do they reinterpret those kinds of things? But I don't know. Like, I try, you know, we do weekly conference calls, and I try to throw in when and where I can. My crowning achievement that to the day I die, I'll swear I'm completely happy with, was I came up with the Torquat that Non was fighting in World of New Krypton 2.
Okay.
And a Torquat, for those of you who don't know, is like a lion porcupine hybrid.
Okay.
That appears in one panel in one issue of Krypton Chronicles. From like 82 or somewhere in there.
Okay.
But they were looking for an animal, and I was like, oh, God, I'm going to be such a nerd, but I'm going to say this on this conference call, and I'm going to be laughed out of the room. And I was like, what about her? And everyone's like, we don't know what that is. And I'm like, it's a porcupine-lion hybrid. And everyone's like, that's kind of cool, I guess. Has that been in a story? And I'm like, oh, God. It's in one panel of one comic ever. Fuck. Yes, I have a girlfriend.
Dude, if you can't geek out in a comic book conference, where can you do it?
And so I scanned in the Torquat and non-fought it in World of New Krypton 2. So,
well,
I think we all kind of contribute here, you know, here and there where we can.
Well, Jamal, what do you think of those old stories? I mean, you know, I and Sterling, obviously, you're enough of a fan that you were able to pull a Torquat out of your ass, so that's good. but you know, I mean, no, honestly, I always thought that was kind of the fun part of the world of Krypton, I mean, that's what the stories were always called, but seeing that kind of sorcery aspect of Krypton always interests me, and I always thought that was kind of fertile ground for some really cool, non-traditional Superman stories.
This isn't a big secret for people who know me. I worship at the altar of Superman. I've been keeping the faith since 1977.
There you go.
So I'm a massive, massive Superman fan and a fan of.
See, you could actually say that you've been keeping the flame since before I was born.
This is true. This is true. Thanks for reminding me of that.
Yeah. Way to be old.
Don't worry, man. I'm right there with you.
But seriously, I mean, I'm just having the best time working on the book, and just all the little, like, getting to draw Krypton, or getting to draw Kandor and Kryptonian society as we're laying it out in the series right now has just been a thrill. One of the things that I'm proud of working on this, and I've just been, like I said, I've been having just an awesome time working on it anyway, but with Supergirl 36, with the death of Zor-El, I think for me was just one of the highlights of working on the run, because that opening sequence was just so powerful and so moving in the script to me. And when I was a teenager, I lost a friend of mine to gun violence. So I was able to channel all of those feelings into that scene. I'm so proud of the way that scene came out.
I am too. I think it's probably the best, one of the best sequences we've done so far. When I was writing that, I lost my father when I was 17, not to violence, but to a massive heart attack. And so those moments where Supergirl's holding Zor-El and he says to her, like, I'm proud of you, like, that was something that I wanted, as I helped my father, I wanted him to say. And he couldn't because he was already gone, unfortunately. Oof. But that was where I drew a lot of that scene from. When you have something like that happen in your family and someone yells from the room and you go running down the hallway, it's almost just like how Jamal drew it. Every step, it seems like just more and more dread mounts in you. And when you finally get there, it's devastating. And that was really what I wanted. And I tried to put that in the script and really make you, Jamal, feel that, so that you would respond in kind and make our readers feel that.
Well, you succeeded, so.
Yeah, I worked that was a really hard sequence to write, obviously, for obvious reasons. But it was important. And to me, John, to go back to your earlier question, to me it's important when you write a comic script that your artist actually feels what they're making a comic script an experience rather than just a... And then Vision walks to Scarlet Witch, and then Scarlet Witch. Like,
sure.
There needs to be emotion behind every movement. Everything needs a reason, and I try to make that pretty clear. Well, hopefully, I am clear in my script.
No, that's not a problem.
And that's why that sequence is. Maybe we should post online sometime just so people know what we're talking about, so it's not just jabbering in the wind. But that sequence, I tried really hard to write. You know, and Jamal responded in kind by drawing, and it's fucking stunning. You know, it's probably my favorite section of New Krypton, and I'm not just trying to pat myself in the back.
No, I understand that.
It's 11 pages. You know, she doesn't get to him for 9 pages, and she, you know, she doesn't have powers. She's depowered at that point, and she's running across an open battlefield to get to him before he dies, because she wants to have to either save his life, and if she can't save his life, which she couldn't, to at least talk to him one last time. And I think anyone that's lost a parent has that regret, you know.
No question.
It's a hard thing. And then Allura's response, you know, when my father passed away, my mother's response wasn't to pull the family members closer. It was to push us away. And that's kind of what you're seeing in Allura, mm-hmm. and how you're seeing, why you're seeing Supergirl and Allura's relationship not deteriorate, but evolve like it is right now.
Yeah.
You're seeing her push Kara away because she's feeling so much pain and she hurts so much inside that Allura, in her deepest heart of hearts, and she would never say this out loud, she's worried that if Kara gets too close, Kara will feel it too. And so she's trying to protect Kara from having to go through the same thing that she's going through. Which, the sad, bitter irony of it is, Kara is going through a totally separate set of emotions and a totally separate set of grief, and needs that contact, and Allura won't give it to her. And it's a really complex relationship they're developing, and at some point something's going to give.
You know, and it's clear that she literally at times in your stories leans on Lana Lang as a surrogate mother, and I know Lana's cover for Supergirl is that, you know, Linda is her niece.
Right.
I look forward then to maybe seeing a confrontation between Allura and Lana should it ever happen, because I wonder how she would feel about this surrogate mother that's kind of taking her place emotionally while she rejects her daughter.
Well, Allura wasn't too happy about it her being Linda Lang initially anyway. So.
Yeah. And Allura's response was, there's no point. And Supergirl goes, well, what do you mean? You know, I can't be Supergirl all the time. And she goes, well, you're not Supergirl all the time. You're Kara Zor-El.
Right.
You're a daughter. Come live in the big city and be a princess. Like, come on. What are you doing? Stop screwing around with these people. And Kara goes, but mother, I've lived here for 2 years. You can't tell me what to do. And Allura goes, I damn well can. And then, and we're in the we're in the middle of all that when all hell breaks loose in New Krypton. So, you know, we didn't get to really see how that resolved, and we won't see how it resolves for a while. But that at some point, that's an interesting idea. Allura and Lana apparently facing off.
There you go. Well, and also too, I was curious once the smoke clears, because this is a big story and there's a lot involved. But how far deep do you want to go into the Linda Lang persona and you know, develop a you know, I think it's smart to involve Superman supporting cast in Supergirl's life, because I think it's you know, obviously they're the two are connected and they should be connected.
Yeah.
But you tell me, you know, what depths you want to go into.
I'll go deeper.
Okay.
There'll be more stuff with Linda Lang's not going away. You know, I think a lot of people interpret it like we set up this identity in 34, and then 35 Allura's like comes in and stomps all over it or whatever. That a lot of people interpret it as like a bait and switch, or maybe just a switch.
Okay.
That we were building up the secret identity in one issue to pull readers in, and then we ha-ha-ha take it away in 35, and that's not the case. Linda Lang isn't going away. She's just, right now we've got so much stuff going on with New Krypton and all this other stuff, I haven't been able to focus on it in the way that I want to. But it's out there. It exists. I was super pumped to see Superman Batman 56, maybe, where Supergirl appeared as Linda Lang.
Right.
And I thought to myself, if as long as that happens elsewhere in the DCU, it's a real thing. And hopefully other people will pick up on the thread and use Linda Lang when and where they can. But yeah, unfortunately, it kind of got sidetracked with all the New Krypton stuff. But I'll pick it up. We're going to do a story about it in Supergirl Annual.
Okay.
Right now, that's tentatively called Linda Lang Day One.
What about her involvement with the other teams? We've seen her in the recent past with the Legion. We've seen her in the recent past with the Titans. Is she going to be in James's Justice League?
She's in James's Justice League, yes.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, James's Justice League was ongoing, but now it's a miniseries, I think. And I'm not sure where she ends up at the end of it. I should ask him about that, actually. Teen Titans, you know, her and Wonder Girl are great friends. They had a falling out in Teen Titans. They've since kind of patched things up, but again, there's so much stuff going on with New Krypton. I don't really have time to address that kind of stuff in my book. I would like to do a Legion thing at some point that I'm going to play close to my keep close to my chest and not tell you about. But there's something in the Legion that I really want to do. How's that for a non-answer?
That's cryptic. That's good. Cryptic is good. Hey, Jamal, I'm stunned because I totally remember this series. And, it, you know, as usual, I hate to admit it, but a lot of times I do. I focus on writing. And right. It's not that I neglect art because I like good art. And was surprised when I was looking up some of your past books that you were the co-creator of Venture. I liked Venture. I liked Venture a lot. Jay Ferber, man. That was a fun story.
Venture will always be my eternal heartbreak.
Heartbreak? Jeez.
Yes.
What happened?
We were only able to do 4 issues of it, and it pissed me off because
sure.
We were only able to do 4 issues. Now, Venture was such a fun project to put together, and the fact that it didn't do well enough for us to even continue it on a small basis will always kill me. For people who don't know, Venture was the story of an immortal named Joseph Campbell, who was actually the hero of 1,000 faces. And he was being blackmailed by a tabloid reporter named Reggie Baxter into playing superhero. He was already doing it on the side, but he was actually a history teacher, a high school history teacher.
That's awesome.
Ralph Hinckley High School.
That's a great idea.
So...
Just the name Hero with 1,000 Faces.
Yeah, the whole thing, man.
Yeah.
Do you still have copies of that, Jamal? Can you send me some?
I probably have a copy. I don't know if I have too many copies. I might have one or two, or at least of, like, the first or the second issue lying around, so I could at least shoot that off to you.
Cool,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, nice. Jay and I put it, it was part of the same launch, the same superhero universe launch that Image was doing. We came out actually the same time as Invincible, and where they redid Shadowhawk, and they had Clockmaker, and a couple of, and Firebreather, also Phil Hester's Firebreather. And I penciled and digitally inked all of the entire thing except for a batch of pages that we got. That Jim Valentino volunteered his time and his energy, because he really believed in the book, into helping us finish the last issue. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was my first real foray into creator-owned comics. And it was actually, for me in a lot of ways, it was an experiment, because I think Venture is actually sort of the forerunner to the style that I'm using right now on Supergirl. And a lot of the tricks that I'm doing on Supergirl is stuff that I started doing working on Venture.
I was surprised to see you involved with Noble Causes.
Yeah, Jay and I, we've been friends and collaborators off and on. We worked on New Warriors for Marvel for about 4 issues before that got canceled. And...
I like that run of New Warriors, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, man.
My brother's a huge New Warriors fan, so anytime New Warriors did anything, I heard about it and would eventually go on to read it.
You know, it's not common knowledge, I guess, but I've actually been working in the business a lot longer than most people think I have. I've actually been working in comics since 1989.
That's crazy, man. Yeah, I saw that. You started when you were 17?
Yeah, I started when I was 17. I was my first job in the industry. I was actually a DC intern for 6 months. I worked in the production department. After that, I went back to school. I worked retail. I worked at Jim Hanley's Universe, and I worked at Forbidden Planet. I was an editor for a while for a couple of small press companies that sprang up and died before anything really came out. But I was the guy with the most experience, so I automatically became the de facto editor-in-chief both times. And then I also worked in advertising. I worked in in marketing for printing for a publishing company. I did a continuing education for psychiatry and psychology. And then around 1995, I just decided I was going to make a real go of freelancing as a pencil, because that's what I ultimately wanted to do. I mean, everything else was just sort of side stuff that I'd get distracted by. But I'd always come back to penciling. So I had actually had just went into doing illustration for a while. And I met Billy Tucci at a convention in Philadelphia in 95, and he asked me to do 8 pages in an issue of She, which turned into working for Billy for almost a year. After that, I did a lot of small press stuff. I was, you know, working with Alex Simmons on Blackjack and on Race Against Time, just, you know, penciling here, inking there, doing fill-ins, you know, what have you. And then in 99, I moved to California for a year and a half and worked at Sony Animation and worked at Marvel doing New Warriors, and then came back to New York in 2001 and just started freelancing on a regular basis. I've been, you know, working in the industry ever since.
Well, I know you had great runs on Nightwing and Firestorm, and enjoyed the current run now on Supergirl, and then you had the event Superman's Reign, the Tangent crossover.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun to do. It was crazy because I hadn't worked with that many characters in a while, so it was a learning experience. But it was such a such a quick project because the stories were only 17 pages, and it actually was a good exercise for me to get my drawing speed up. So, but it was also I was working with Dan Jurgens and basically working from a Marvel-style plot, so I had a little bit more freedom as far as the storytelling was going, and it was actually, it was good, you know, I'm comfortable either way, either working with a full script or with a plot, but sometimes you
Don't tell me that.
No.
All right, I've turned in the next 6 issues while we've been talking, man.
There you go.
One-line plots. Enjoy.
Oh, thanks, man.
What's the fan reaction been so far on Supergirl, guys? I mean, it seemed like in New York, you guys had a nice, healthy line at the convention and everything.
It's been 90% positive.
I've found it's been overwhelmingly positive. Like so positive, you kind of get nervous. Like,
yeah. So positive that it's to the side of kind of like the reviews for the new Star Trek movie. Like, everybody loves it except for like that one guy in Spokane, Washington, who's like, "You guys suck. I like Jeff Loeb and Michael Turner better."
Which I like Jeff Loeb and Michael Turner's version. Like,
oh, so do I, man.
Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, and how much now? There's a question, Sterling. You're at the Empath Treehouse with Jeff and Jeff.
Yeah.
So I know.
And occasionally guest starring Alan Heinberg.
Yes.
when he's not at Gray's.
Tell me, has Loeb had any comments for your run so far?
Yes, he has. No, it was great. Like I walked into his office the other day, and I'd left a copy of Supergirl, 40. Yeah, I left a copy of Supergirl 40 on his desk, and he held it up and he goes, "This is fucking great," and sets it back down again, and then goes back to typing, and I'm like, okay, I didn't need anything, I'm just glad that you said that, and I turned right back around and walked out.
Very good.
I think he's happy with it. I don't know, you know. I very early on, it became apparent that his version of Supergirl Kara Zor-El and my version were different. And we sort of agreed to not talk about her, and what we felt about her, and how we wanted to handle how he would handle it differently or whatever.
I understand.
And I appreciated that very much. And,
oh, sure.
And, you know, I'm very respectful for the work that the guy's done the book before me, and I don't believe in invalidating everything someone else has done. Like, so I've made it a point to not invalidate anything. You know, even with the Secret Origin of Supergirl issue, it was written in such a way that all those things still existed, but now we have different information that sheds new light on her origins. Because I don't want to I don't want to stomp on other guys' stuff, you know? And I happen to like some of those stories that other guys, that Joe Kelly and Jeff Loeb did.
Sure.
There are fans in the world that did not, and sorry, but I kind of like it. In regards to Loeb, Loeb is such an awesome, like, he's the greatest guy ever. But I don't think I would ever ask him to talk, you know, more about the character and how he felt, because I don't want him to be annoyed with me, and I don't want to get, you know, annoyed with him. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I understand that.
Loeb's like the nicest guy ever. Loeb and Jeff Johns are you know, two of my long term heroes anyway. And to share office space with them is just a blast. It's never a dull moment here at the Empath Magic Treehouse.
Have you taken the tour yet, Jamal? Have you been over there yet?
No, I haven't been out to L.A. In a couple of years. So,
of course, you realize I say all of this, and Jeff Loeb's standing next to me with a gun to my head.
There's no question.
Saying, be sure to say I'm the nicest guy. Be sure to say that.
Oh, yeah.
Tell John I'm awesome.
Well, I just talked to him last week, and I've got an episode coming up with him. And oh yeah, no, and he said, and honestly, he enjoys working with you guys as well. And it sounds like it's a fun, creative place, and that's cool.
It's a ball, man. It's a ball 24/7. You know, we've got ghouls and ghosts, arcade game in okay. one corner, and just stacks of comics in the other. I mean, it's just a fun, creative environment, and we come and hang out and work and talk about work, and that's that. You know, it's like having a bullpen, but without an HR department, so we can, you know, talk freely.
Oh, that's good, man. Now I'm very envious. Jamal, do you work from home?
Yeah, I do, actually, and it's kind of funny because about two blocks away from my house, there are about 12 different comic book artists, including Dean Haskell, Becky Cloonan, and Riley Brown. So, and they all share like two or three studios down in that direction. Mm-hmm. And I'm splitting space with my wife and my one-year-old daughter.
But who else would you want to split space with? Come on.
I wouldn't want to split space with anybody else. And part of the reason why I do work at home is because I work so late sometimes, Corinna's afraid she'll never see me again. Like, I'll just disappear one day, and, you know, she'll have to come hunt me down.
I live with my girlfriend, and she'll often call about 9 p.m. and be like, so were you coming home today? Or no?
Very nice.
So.
Well, boys, I think the story, like I said, has been great, and I look forward to its conclusion and what may lie ahead. I mean, you know, are you in for the long run, Jamal?
I'm staying on the book for a while longer. That's the plan anyway.
Okay.
And I'm on the book till they pry it from my cold dead hand.
Thank you, Charlton Heston. Very good.
I think is what Chuck Heston said.
And are there going to be any announcements in the summer that concern you, boys?
Maybe.
All right. Very cool.
Was that silence? Was that silence good for you?
Yeah, I think that worked.
Like deer in headlights. Like I just paused. My eyes went wide. I'm like,
shit.
Yeah.
Yes. Ish.
All right. Cool.
I guess.
Well, very good.
Maybe. I think definitely maybe.
All right. Excellent. Well, I hope to hear more, and you know, good luck. And when more things are announced, I'm sure we'll have more to talk about. And
John, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's fun talking to you. And like I say, I'm sorry that it has only been at conventions that I've seen you both. And look forward to the next one. And we'll definitely bug you both on the phone, and we'll do it again.
All right. Sounds good.
Igel and Gates, the creative team on Supergirl. It was a pleasure talking to them. And do yourself a favor. Pick up the book. It's very good. You're not getting the full New Krypton story if you're not also reading Supergirl. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you that you can find Word Balloon all over the internet. We're, of course, at our own website, wordballoon.com. Also, you can find us, of course, at Newsarama. We're at myspace.com/wordballoon. You can follow me on Facebook by my name or via Twitter, John Word Balloon. And any questions or comments about the show, make sure you check out the Word Balloon message boards at jinxworld.com and at wordballoon.com. And also, you can always email me as well, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.